You're listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. Tonight's guest producers are all part of a program at Outside In, and they produce short, power-packed pieces about sexual health. Stay tuned.
My name is Neil Yosha, and I coordinate the ChatPDX project here at Outside In. ChatPDX is a coalition of organizations and individuals that are trying to curb HIV and AIDS transmission through outreach, peer education, HIV testing, and new media. I do this work at Outside In, which is an organization that began in 1968 and serves homeless youth. They're a radical and cutting-edge organization that subscribes to the harm reduction philosophy, which means meeting people where they are. They provide medical services and case management, and they have an educational resource center, a school, a job training site, the Virginia Woof Doggy Daycare Center, alcohol and drug support, and drop-in services where people can come and get a meal, do their laundry, do whatever they need to do. The ChatPDX program has been running for about a year, and in the year that it's been going, it's accomplished quite a lot of things. We've established the only youth-only HIV testing site in the city. It's the second and fourth Monday of the month from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Cascade AIDS Project at Pivot, which is 209 Southwest 4th Avenue. So twice a month, people ages 24 and under can come and get a free rapid HIV test where it's an oral mouth swab and you get your results in 20 minutes. And there are counselors there to provide you with whatever information you need. And while you're hanging out, there's Wii and games and snacks and internet. And it's just another place for youth to hang out in the city. They have a Facebook page, the ChatPDX Facebook page, where you can get updates and information about sexual health topics. There's a blog. They're very good about updating. So anything you post, you will instantly get a reply. It's a good hub of accurate and fun information about HIV. The Peer Educators Act at Outside In has done a lot in this past year as well. Last summer, they created a series of films about sexual health from topics ranging from myths about STD to gender identity and drug use, pregnancy, and more. You can see those on the ChatPDX YouTube channel. It was also screened at the Portland Art Museum last summer, and hundreds of people came to see the work of our peer educators. It was very exciting. They've been doing improv theater, a genre called activating theater, where they create real-life scenarios having to do with sexual health, and they've gone and performed it in different schools and youth groups where they set a scene and they start to act it out, and halfway through we stop the action and ask the audience if this is realistic or if they would do something differently and invite them on stage to act out a different solution to the issue. So it's a safe way for the audience members to become participants and try out their choices. They've done negotiating condom use, how to support a friend while they're coming out, or how to deal with peer pressure around doing drugs. So they've taken that show on the road, and they're creating more activating theater scenes as we speak. They've painted a mural. They've built an altar dedicated to the cure for HIV, which you can see in the Outside In clinic lobby, which they introduced by having a huge procession through town. We started out as 30 people and ended up with 70 in the Outside In courtyard by the time we were done. And this most recent project has been the radio internship with KBOO. Our goal is to empower young people to share their point of view with their peers while gaining employable skills and making community connections in the process. While they do that, youth transcend their specific situation and become artists and activists that comment on their world. HIV infection rates are on the rise among young people, especially between the ages of 14 and 24, and specifically among minority youth and other at-risk populations. And although youth can't easily affect the systematic factors that contribute to the situation, they can feel empowered to make positive choices about their body and the life that they lead. And the HIV epidemic has been going on for decades, and it's high time that we turn to the youth for some answers instead of just telling them what to do. So maybe this new attitude of youth-driven peer education will lead to some positive results. Last week, 18 youth set out to create radio programming about sexual health topics. They started by brainstorming some subjects and decided to pick topics that they feel that they are a unique resource on rather than information that can be easily found on the internet or elsewhere. They pledged to stay solution-based and positive and to provide resources for youth. In the beginning of the week, they learned how to use the recorders and the equipment, and by the end of the week, we've discovered that we have future sound engineers and DJs and writers. They created 6 different skits. The first one is Youth Suicide Prevention. It's a really strong piece where folks have shared their personal wisdom and experience, and they talk about the warning signs of depression and the warning signs that can lead to suicidal ideation and where to get help. So this piece is from the heart, but it also is based in a lot of experience. This piece is really strong, and I really commend the bravery of all the youth in all these pieces for taking on topics that they have a personal connection to. Teen pregnancy is another skit that people did. It's a huge issue. They called it Youth Gossip PDX, and it's a discussion and interview based on the song Runaway Love by Ludacris and Mary J. Blige. And it has an interview with someone that was a young mom. They talk about the contradiction between how it's seen in the media as something cool. You know, they have TV shows now about young moms and versus the reality of it. That one was made by Juicy, Desiree, and Eli. Next was trying to debunk stigmas surrounding HIV. People know a lot of facts, but there's still misconceptions about HIV. So this piece goes out and interviews people on the streets and finds out what the craziest stereotypes they've heard about HIV, and then they go and set out to bust one of those myths in the show. Maggie and Jared did that one. Another piece is violence against sex workers. Violence against sex workers happens daily and often goes unreported and unaddressed. Due to the nature of the profession, the growing population of sex workers in Portland is forced to live outside the everyday awareness of most residents. Because of blind eyes often turned towards the population, it is difficult to provide care for survivors of violence and to prevent future attacks. So this section highlights the Sex Worker Outreach Coalition and Portland's Bad Dateline. William Madden, Rogelio, Eric, and Nicole have taken on this tough subject. Aisling and Juliet took on BDSM, and I commend these ladies because when they picked this topic, they didn't even know what BDSM stands for. And by the end, they produced a show that's very informative, also addresses stigma and gives some resources. This is very cool. The last group is Commitment, Loving Your You. Joey, Mad Hatter, Jess, and Kayla take on exploring trust and commitment and how they play out in a healthy relationship. So really, there's a little something for everybody in this hour-long program.
I'm Kayla Stone with my friends here at KBOO 90.7 FM. On the air right now, youth are making the time with some sexy hot talk. Coordinated by Neely Yosha, Roberto Espinosa, ChatPDX is a sex education recreation support group inspired to provide listeners with the legitimate facts and opinions from your local community. A collaboration between organizations and individuals working to curb HIV and AIDS transmission among young people through outreach, HIV testing, and social media. We have a whole lot to cover today with all the ins and outs of some very controversial subjects. With 6 different groups here united for sexual awareness, we are progressive interns radically devoted to provide young adults with the proper resources available to become informed with the real facts. Often we hear a lot of rumors concerning STDs. In the studio, DJ Derp and Titus are enthused to start myth-busting into the reality of stigma surrounding HIV/AIDS, exposing the dirt that most people are too afraid to tell or ask about.
Thank you for joining us on HIV Mythbusters. I'm your host, DJ Derp, and I'm here with Titus, the tech guru. Today we'll be smashing some myths surrounding HIV and AIDS. Earlier this week, we took to the streets to ask the people what is the most ridiculous thing they've heard about HIV and AIDS, and this is what we got.
Well, when I was a child, my parents told me that if I ever got a blood transfusion, that I would get full-blown AIDS immediately because all gay people donated and they all had AIDS.
So what is the most ridiculous myth you've heard about HIV?
Wow, I don't know. Maybe that you can get it from kissing?
I was in Nicaragua and I was backpacking and I heard a man say, "How could he get HIV? He's a man." Duh.
What's the what?
The most ridiculous myth that you've heard about HIV and AIDS.
Oh, I don't know. That you can get it from other people's spit?
You can't use a bathroom
after someone with HIV or AIDS has used it, because then you might get it from the toilet seat.
We join you now from the KBOO studio toilets. We are here to bust the myth that you can get HIV from a toilet seat. I'm here with Titus. Our gracious volunteer, John, a man who is HIV positive, has just finished using the restroom. And on the tail of his stank, we have Titus, ready to dive in and see if he can't catch that bug. How are you feeling about that, Titus?
It smells horrible. Really bad. Eggs.
Titus, get on over there. Let's get started. He's taking down his pants, ladies and gentlemen, and Titus is sitting on the seat where moments ago John 2 sat. He's grinding himself upon the toilet, and in a strange turn of events, he's licking the toilet seat and drinking from the bowl. How does it taste, Titus?
Tastes like a toilet seat. It's terrible.
2 weeks later, after a rapid mouth swab test, Titus has come up HIV negative. Myth busted! Every 9 seconds, someone is infected with HIV. They're not getting it from toilet seats or sharing drinks, swapping spit, or hanging out with monkeys. Most people contract HIV through their sexual practices. For more information or help, visit outsidein.org.
Thank you very much, Titus. Kayla Stone, back to encourage everybody in society to educate each other. It's a way to decrease the chance of contracting HIV, AIDS, as well as sexually transmitted diseases. Next, we have a segment about suicide prevention with Mouse, Travis, and Thunder Thor. How about you guys tell us a little bit about how to prevent people from giving up on existence? Who can you trust when you can't trust yourself? And how to move forward and continue without falling back into that darkness? Take it away.
Preventing youth suicide is important because we have more to stand for. We still are the face of tomorrow, no matter where we tread. You are listening to KBOO 90.7. I'm C from Guerrilla Theater, working with Travis, Thunder Thor, and Mouse. Also, we have a special guest interview with Juicy that I will be hosting. We have a group segment to inform you, our listeners, about youth suicide and prevention. We will cover how to be a supporting person to someone or people who are having mental crisis. We will give you resources to help yourself get help. Now, stats with Travis, my personal Aries.
In 2010, depression was the leading disability in the world. Every 16 minutes, a person dies as a result of suicide. Suicide is the third leading cause of death among people ages 15 to 24. Why are things this way? It's very simple. People are more abused, neglected, and traumatized than perhaps ever before. Neglect is when a parent forgets about their child or their needs. That causes the child to feel depressed, because they don't know if it's okay for them to be neglected or not. Abuse is when someone is emotionally or mentally, physically, or sexually harmed. This causes the victim to feel hopeless, remorseful, and traumatized. Trauma is the result of neglect or abuse. It is when the brain cannot get rid of the pain. The person is still living through the pain. A hallucination is an example of the brain suffering from trauma. It can neither fix the problem nor get rid of it, and continues to relive the negative experience. When you are traumatized, you have a misconception of pain. You think the pain will never go away. And trauma takes over positive emotions, and this leads to thoughts of suicide.
Angie, why was I the last to know? Such a devastating blow. I never thought she'd be the one to go. We started out in elementary school. Two dorky kids no one thought was cool. And when we hit high school, when the last thing she said was, "You're one of the only people I consider my friends." I have no idea why her life she would choose to end. I guess she couldn't overcome the classmates who mocked her or the voices inside her head. Now I'm left with my regret. Looking back, it seems you always know the perfect thing to do. But now that I know the signs, at least I'll be ready next time.
How can you tell if you or someone you know is depressed? Most people who are depressed won't admit it without help. One of the most common warning signs of depression is hopelessness or an unrelenting low mood. People tend to alienate themselves when they are depressed. Unexpected rage or anger is a sign of depression. People overact to simple interactions. This could look like a complete misunderstanding to an abrupt mood change, crying, lashing out, and even screaming. An increase in alcohol or drug use does have a significant link to depression because people tend to rely on self-medication. Self-medication is when you act as your own doctor and abuse a variety of drugs to suppress the feelings of pain. It may mask the pain for a short period of time, but it never makes it go away. Desperation is another warning sign of depression.
If you don't give me what I want, I will kill myself.
Taking risks of unreasonable proportions is another sign of depression. For example, doing a massive amount of drugs and not caring if it could kill you. If you feel like this sounds like you or someone you might know, stay tuned. We have information that could save your life and help you if you feel depressed.
Hi, I am Thunder Thor, here to tell you about a few toll-free numbers for you to call if you are seeking some help. First, we have the Crisis Line. Their number is 1-800-SUICIDE. Once again, that is 1-800-SUICIDE. 1-800-784-2433. They are a toll-free 24-hour helpline to help all ages of people struggling with suicidal thoughts. Next up, we have the Suicide Prevention through Oregon Partnership, and they have trained adults to help people 18 and over. Their number is 1-800-273-8255. Once again, that is 1-800-273-8255.
Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in. I have an important interview with Juicy, and she is going to share a personal insight on youth prevention of suicide. What would you like to share with our listening audience today?
Thank you for having me. About 6 or 7 months ago, I was going to my best friend's house, and she wasn't home yet, so she told me just go ahead and use the spare key that she had given me and wait for her in her living room. And so doing that, I did, and I noticed her mom's car was out in the driveway, but when I arrived inside the house, I heard not a sound. So myself being worried and who I am and trying to figure out what was wrong, I searched through the entire house, and I found her face down on her bed with all of her pill bottles empty. When I say all of her pill bottles, I mean 12 different prescriptions that if you take them, take more than the prescribed dosage, it could be deadly. And she had just filled her 30-day prescription. I had my Bluetooth headset in my ear connected to my cell phone, so I dialed 911. And as I was on the phone with 911, I proceeded to perform CPR. And I just got done with receiving my CPR certification a week before. And so I'm sad to say she's no longer with us, but she did live for at least a good month and a half after that event. But what we're to understand, the reasoning for this was because her fiancé had broken up with her for another guy. In fact, he wasn't straight, he was gay. And so she went into a suicidal mode. And we tried everything to prevent this from even happening. We tried to have her talk to us. We tried to let her write it in a journal, draw pictures. We even got her a gym membership to try and punch it out and add a punching bag. And we thought it was working because she was showing no signs or anything, and then this happened, and unfortunately we did everything we could for the prevention, but she just didn't take to it.
Thank you, Juicy, for having such a personal story. And yes, you showed outstanding perseverance in performing CPR and following your gut instinct. You are a true hero, and I applaud you for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Thor, and more resources for you.
Thank you, C, for that lovely interview with Juicy. I am Thunder Thor with two more resources. These numbers are for youth struggling with suicidal thoughts. We have the Oregon Partnership Youth Line, where youth can call and talk to peers around the same age. Their number is 1-877-553-8336. Once again, that number is 1-877-553-8336. And last but not least, we have the Trevor Project. I spoke with them briefly, and they were awesome. They specialize with youth that identify as LGBTQ ages 13 through 24 and their friends and allies. Their number is 1-866-488-7386. Once again, that number is 1-866-488-7386.
When your emotions get the best of you, don't let them get the rest of you. Thank you.
Travis, we thank you very much for enlightening our community with the real support that's needed. Remember the valuable piece of advice, guys. You are never alone, and there are always people willing to help. All you have to do is reach out.
Next up, on Circle A Radio, youth at Outside In tackle the subject of teen pregnancy and prevention.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Youth Gossip PDX. My name is Juicy, and today we'll be talking about teen pregnancy. So first, we're going to get it started off with a little song clip. It's from Runaway Love by rapper Ludacris and R&B icon Mary J. Blige. This song touches on the subject of a teenage girl who gets pregnant, which leads into the main topic for today's discussion on teen pregnancy.
Little Erica is 11 years old. She's steady trying to figure why the world is so cold. So she pops to get rid of all the pain. Plus she's having sex with a boy who's 16. Emotions run deep and she thinks she's in love. So there's no protection, he's using no glove. Never thinking about the consequences of her actions. Living for today and not tomorrow's satisfaction. The days go by and her belly gets big. The father bails out, he ain't ready for a kid. Knowing her mama will blow it all out of proportion. Plus she lives poor, so no money for abortion. Erica is stuck up in the world on her own, forced to think that hell is a place called home. Nothing else to do but get her clothes and pack. She says she about to run away and never come back.
All right, thank you for listening to that clip. Again, that was Runaway Love by rapper Ludacris and R&B icon Mary J. Blige. So we're going to move on to our discussion today. Today we have in studio Miss Desiree, who we are going to interview today. Thank you for coming, Desiree.
You're welcome.
I heard it through the grapevine that you got pregnant when you were younger. So how old were you when you conceived your first child?
I was just turning 14 and gave birth around 15.
Okay. Did you have a boy or a girl?
A girl.
Aww. What's her name, if you don't mind me asking?
Her name's Kylie.
Kylie. Aww. So, you know, being a teenager and pregnant, how did you balance your responsibilities, such as if you went to work, how did you balance raising your child and going to work, or if you were in school, how did you balance that? How does it work out for you?
Definitely going to school was a lot harder with having my child. It was hard to be able to take care of her and also do my homework, because she would have to be fed or, you know, put down for a nap or changed. So it was hard for me to do that. And my mom and my dad would be working, so I would have to get a babysitter for her. And it was going through the changes and definitely difficult.
Right. And totally understandable. Did you use any resources such as welfare? And by welfare, I mean WIC or food stamps or cash benefits, or did you go to a different resource center, or did you just do it completely on your own with the help of your parents?
My parents really didn't help that much. They wanted me to actually do it for myself. I used WIC. I didn't get much cash benefits, but I definitely did it on my own, except for the WIC. I needed help with the formula, so they helped me get what I needed.
And just to clarify what WIC is, WIC is an anagram for Women, Infant, and Children. It's a program that's out there that can give women the ability to go to a grocery store that accepts it for formula, eggs, milk, cheese, the necessities and proteins that they need to build up their calcium for them and their child. Did you know of any other resources that you could have accessed at the time, or were there none around that you could access, and WIC was the only one?
I knew of WIC because my best friend had twins. It was a small town, so we didn't really have a lot of different resources there. So I didn't know of any other resource, like adoption agencies or anything like that. There was only WIC.
Facebook and Twitter, this morning, really irritated me. I got the post sent to my cell phone via text message, and a 16-year-old girl was glorifying that she indeed was pregnant. Now, I don't understand why we frown upon it in society, but yet we glorify it in mass media productions, whether that be in television, some radio stations, not all, TV, you know, magazines, books, all of this. So, I wanted to touch base on that, and also to touch base on teen fathers, because, you know, we hear about all these teen mothers and everything, but you don't hear anything about the teen fathers as well. So, what are your guys' thoughts about teen fathers that try to be there, but they're not, but the mother won't let them be there? Desiree?
I certainly didn't have that experience because the father wasn't really around. His mother had moved, so I didn't really have the experience with that. But I think that if they try, I think that's a good thing. But if the mothers won't let them, then how can they actually do what they want to do, the fathers? How can they actually be there for their child when the mothers won't let them?
Sometimes it's really hard for teen fathers to be like, oh, I have to man up. And they do run. Sometimes there are those that do want to stay. And in that case, if the mother is not allowing the father to see their child, there are places and people they can go and do resources to find out how to get custody of that child. Because I know that from where I'm from in Colorado, if teenage people get pregnant and the mother says, I do not want my baby's dad to be around my kid, they have to go through the court process and prove that he's not an okay father in order for them to take that custody away. And so a lot of times it becomes stressful and hard, and at times it can be really at a point where things don't go the way that they may or want. But it's never okay unless there is a definite good reason as to why that father should not be allowed to see that kid, such as in young cases where there may be sexual assault involved,
right.
The father just isn't really, really ready to man up. I don't like using the word man up, but at the same time, that's what it means to become a dad. It takes a lot.
Mm-hmm. It's one thing to be a father, but it takes a true man to be a dad. And that can be said for mothers, too. I'm not just saying that for men, you know, because any woman can be a mother, but it takes a true woman to be a mom. But moving on from that for a little bit, I want to touch base on the resources that are available for teen mothers and teen fathers here in the Portland metro area. There's Outside In. They have the health clinic there, and they're able to do pregnancy testing and STD and HIV rapid testing, and also able to refer you to other places such as Planned Parenthood and the Pregnancy Resource Center. Eli, I know that you had, you've talked to somebody from another agency. Which one would that be?
SARC. And what SARC is basically it's the Sexual Assault Resource Center. And they do base a lot of their treatment off of, like, sexual assault victims. So if you end up getting pregnant due to a sexual assault, then you can call them and they can refer you to, they also refer you to other agencies. And I spoke with one of the advocates there named Liz, and she normally would refer people who want to talk about pregnancy and, like, want to know what resources are available. She went ahead and gave me the number and the website to a place called Backline. And what that is, it's a teen hotline for pregnancy, and they have all sorts of things. Yes, for questions, it is really cool. And the website for that is www.yourbackline.org, and it's a pretty neat website.
Nice. Thank you. And if you are downtown locally, there is the Multnomah County Westside Health Clinic located on Washington, I believe, but don't quote me on that. But it is downtown, and it is off of the Bus and Max lines.
I wanted to enlighten you more on what OI does, because I've worked previously with them and known some friends who are pregnant.
Just to let people know that OI is a it's a slang term for outside in, the O and the I. So just when you hear say OI or anything, that's what we're talking about. Go ahead, Eli.
Thanks. Also, what they do is they can provide prenatal vitamins for youth that are able. And they also have the, there is a program through Outside In that will also help, like, with case managing and stuff like that. So they are definitely a good resource, not just their clinic, but if you are under the age of 25, there are other resources that will help you be able to take care of your children and get you into different programs. There are other places out in that building that will help, definitely.
Thank you again for listening in to Youth Gossip PDX. My name is Juicy.
I'm Desiree.
And I'm Eli.
Please remember to be safe, always use protection, and please know that there are resources out there to help you. Thank you and have a good, wonderful day. Bye-bye.
You are listening to Circle A Radio here on KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Tonight, we are spotlighting the work of youth producers from Outside In. Outside In is a local clinic in Portland, Oregon, whose mission is to help homeless youth and other marginalized people move towards improved health and self-sufficiency. Recently, youth from Outside In teamed with KBOO to create radio spots encouraging sexual health and responsibility.
We at Circle A Radio are anti-censorship. Unfortunately, due to FCC regulations, we have had to censor this next piece. In this next news piece, we've beeped out the colloquial term, and where you hear the beep, the FCC-approved term is oral sex.
Prostitution and sex trade is running rampant with the declining economy tumbling. Some people are involved in the sex trade out of desperation. Others are in for the money, and some people are actually abducted and forced into sex slavery. So how about you guys tell us about that?
Sex and violence. Sex and violence.
Welcome to Guerrilla Theater, KBOO Media Internship on 90.7 KBOO Radio. This is Roberto Espinosa, and today we're going to talk about violence committed against sex workers here in the Portland metro area. According to the Portland Bad Dateline, a report given January 2011, a red Jeep, soft top, with a white male, short blonde hair, had a medium build, smelled of alcohol, picked up a sex worker on 82nd and Holiday, wanted a got mad when he couldn't get it up, opened door, grabbed her hair, and bashed her head against the cement against the freeway wall. He stole her purse, coat, and shoes. This is just one report given on the newest issue of Portland Bad Dateline. Violence against sex workers happens every day and often goes unreported and ignored. Today we're going to hear an interview with Haven Wheelock, an advocate from SWOC, the Sex Workers Outreach Coalition, a community partnership between local nonprofit agencies committed to helping stop violence targeted towards sex workers. Haven is going to tell us about a monthly publication for sex workers called The Bad Dateline and inform us about some of the resources available in Portland for sex workers who are victims of violence, as well as what we can do as members of the community to address this issue and how to get involved, stay safe, and help one another out.
This is Will the Beast, and I'm here with Haven from SWOC, which is Sex Workers Outreach Coalition. Haven helps with Portland's Bad Dateline, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Hi, Haven. Thanks for coming in.
No problem. Thank you.
Or I guess thanks for calling. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what SWOC is?
Yeah. SWOC is an organization of service providers who are trying to providing services to sex workers regardless of whether they want to stay in sex work or leave sex work, just kind of meeting them where they're at.
Right on. What kind of resources do they offer?
Well, we work with many social service providers, and we're a coalition of people already in the community who are providing services to sex work, advocating for better services.
Right on. How can someone access these services or get a hold of SWOC?
If sex workers are looking for services, there are many different venues for services, but SWAC doesn't really provide more than referrals to other resources.
How would they, do you want to plug
the Yeah, SWOC? You can definitely check out the SWAC website. The easiest way is always to contact the 24-hour Portland Women Crisis Line, and they can refer you to services, too. Their number is 1-888-235-5333.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Bad Date Line?
Yeah, the Bad Date Line was a grassroots initiative that started several years ago to outreach to sex workers who were victims of a bad date. And maybe I should define what a bad date is.
Yeah.
If you're working as a sex worker and you're attacked or you're robbed or you're beaten up, any kind of violent actions, we take reports from them without them having to go to the police. And then we publish a monthly sheet of those reports and distribute it to over 120 people, different organizations, different individuals, to have it disseminated to the people who need it, to kind of let them know what to watch out for.
What are a few of those places that make this available?
Oh, there's a long list. Any outside in, the whole homeless youth continuum, Portland Women's Crisis Line, you can actually contact us and we can have it sent directly to you. You can have it emailed to you as well.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
How would someone go about reporting a bad date?
There's a couple of different ways you can report. We have a Hotmail account that you can email a report to, which is pbdlreport@hotmail.com. We also have a phone number, a message phone you can call and leave reports on. Or you can contact either the Portland Women's Crisis Line, anyone at Outside In. Many social service providers have been trained to take reports. I think the cops would love to have more information on who these bad dates are and would love for people to file police reports. But at the same time, with the fact that sex work is still illegal, many people do not want to report at all.
Yeah, do you think some of the reason why this population, the population of sex workers, is targeted for this kind
Very much so. I mean, I think that people do know that sex workers aren't likely to report crimes in general because what they're doing is considered criminal. And, you know, would you want to risk going to jail to report the $50 that you just got stolen from you?
Mm-hmm, right.
So, and they, you know, because of the stigmas that are still placed on sex workers, they're very hesitant about even acknowledging that they are sex workers.
So what are some things that our listeners or that maybe even I could do to raise awareness or to get involved?
You know, for the most part, people, you know, be nice to sex workers. You know, remember that we're all just people doing
right.
What we're doing. It has nothing to do with what we do for a living.
Word.
Don't beat people up. That's really helpful.
Yeah.
Tip well if you are visiting sex workers. That's helpful, too. As for getting involved with the Portland Bad Dateline or SWAC, I would just say email us. We do some education and awareness events throughout the year and can always use help with that. We are looking for sex workers who want to be more involved, who are either current or former sex workers, who are willing to be out about their work and talk about their work. So if you are a current or former sex worker who is interested in getting involved, we're always interested for that.
Cool. Well, do you want to do one more quick plug of a phone number or any kind of contact information?
Yeah, I will throw out the Portland Bad Dateline's voicemail. Now, granted, it is a voicemail, so if you're making a report, please make sure you leave as much message as you can about what happened. And that phone number is 503-535-3901. And you can also email reports to PBDL, as in Portland Bad Dateline, reports@hotmail.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Haven, for helping us out and doing this interview.
No problem. Thank you. Break that easy.
Drop that hole, man. Break that easy. Violence against sex workers happens every day, and it's on us to help stop it. The Bad Dateline is only a small fraction of the violence reported against sex workers, and it does its best to help those in need. Remember that sex workers are humans, nothing more, and we should all treat them with dignity and respect. This has been a broadcast on 90.7 KBOO, a partnership with Outside In's Guerrilla Theater. Sex.
Those of you that like to spark erotic, soothing passion behind those closed doors of the bedroom, we have on the BDSM tip line with some tricks on how to practice that angry fetish that you thirst for.
You let me violate you. Hi, I'm Ashling O'Grady.
And I'm Juliet Moon.
And we are here today to talk about BDSM relationships and the stigma associated with being involved. We thought that we would let you form your own opinion about its safety. BDSM stands for Bondage, Discipline, Sadomasochism. The first recorded existence of BDSM dates back to the 9th century when ritual flagellations such as a cane had the intent of sexual arousal in erotic relationships. It is a type of adult role-playing. Sexual intercourse or climax is not always necessary. In fact, teasing and torture can be what makes BDSM so appealing to people. The roles may be switched between either dominant or submissive partners. For example, someone might be submissive in everyday life, but their BDSM preference could be either dominant or submissive, depending on his or her own likes and dislikes. Sometimes ownership plays a role in the relationship between two people, with one person being a sort of slave to the other. The use of collars, specific tattoos, and piercings expresses this aspect of the relationship. There can be more than two people involved in a BDSM relationship, and oftentimes there's a fantasy that is trying to be fulfilled. Strap-on play, candle wax, torture, electro-torture, bondage, flogging, which is essentially whipping or beating of the human body, slapping, and ice torture are all examples of BDSM tactics. We actually went around Portland to ask people what they knew about BDSM, so let's listen to those interviews.
Have you ever heard of BDSM before?
Yes, I have. I like to do bondage and stuff and get scratched up. I do. I like to get bitten.
Do you think it is possible to have a healthy relationship incorporating BDSM?
I feel like both parties are okay with it.
What do you think are some pointers or safety tips when using BDSM?
Maybe like a safety word or something.
What is your experience with BDSM?
Actually, I was into it since I was about 17 years old in San Francisco. I'm 49.
Do you think it is possible to have healthy relationships incorporating BDSM?
Absolutely.
What's your opinion, I guess, to do with safety? What are some suggestions you might have?
Well, obviously, know your partners, and if not, wear some raincoat.
So protection is very important.
Okay, hi, Mo. Have you ever heard of BDSM?
I mean, I've had fun and done it safely. Some people don't like girls, some people don't like boys, some people don't, you know what I'm saying, like same sex.
Have you ever been in a relationship like that, or?
Yeah.
And do you have a healthy relationship incorporating these tactics?
I'm really looking for no relationship.
We're going to ask you a few questions about, what is it, BDSM. Have you ever heard of that?
Nah, I ain't never heard of BDSM.
Alright, it's bondage, discipline, sadomasochism, has to do with role-playing. Now that you know a little bit about it, do you think it's possible to have a healthy relationship incorporating kinky foreplay, you know, teasing and, you know, different sorts of cuffs, whips, chains, type of stuff like that?
The pain is always a turn-off.
Have you ever heard of BDSM?
Don't know much about it.
Okay, well, it's a type of relationship. It has to do with submission and dominance. You've heard of it? Have you ever known anyone to be in a relationship such as that?
No, not I'm aware of, no.
What do you think about that type of relationship? Do you think that it can be healthy, or?
I think it could be healthy if it's not, if the entire relationship isn't built around making one person submit, if there isn't even give and take.
Can I get your name?
Jeremy Hubbard, 23.
Yeah, we're doing an interview to do with BDSM, how it can, you know, be like a healthy relationship still.
My relationship's fine without all that.
Do you think it's still possible for others to have healthy relationships with that as a part of their sex life?
Yeah, I actually know a few. Sorry. They have kids and they're married now.
Any suggestions to keep a healthy relationship going on?
Lots and lots of sex, morning and night.
Hi, Joseph. Have you ever heard of BDSM? It's a type of relationship between two or more people. It involves bondage and dominant-submissive type relationship between people.
No, I can't say that I have.
It's kind of like a subculture, but we're just trying to find out if anyone knows anything about it.
No, I haven't heard about it.
Okay, what do you think about dominant-submissive relationships between people?
That's them, but that for me, I'm not into that.
I have a question. Do you think it's possible to conduct a healthy relationship incorporating these tactics?
Yeah, anything's possible.
BDSM has a certain stigma around it. Terms such as perversion, aberration, and deviation are used to describe people that engage in BDSM. These people are often thrown into a category, and judgment is passed on to these people. They are thought of as having a mental disorder. It's not surprising, considering that up until 1973, the American Psychiatric Association classified homosexuality as a mental disease. But hey, that just goes to show that a sheltered mind has shallow depths. The level of pain tolerance that a person has could make pain tactics more or less effective. Immobilization and pain are some actual psychological effects that can increase the risk of physical harm. To minimize the risk, safe words are used, such as green for okay, yellow for getting too intense or slow down, and red for stop, there's too much pain. The ancient Kama Sutra uses these rules too. Apparently, the appeals court of Hamm in Germany made a decision in February 2006 that sexual inclinations towards sadomasochism show no lack of capabilities for successful child raising. What an accomplishment. BDSM is a thriving subculture. A well-known symbol for BDSM is the leather pride flag. Also, Betty Page was a model of BDSM. Hot Topic, which can be found at any local mall, is a punk store that sells crops, chains, handcuffs, and other sex toys. The Folsom Street Fair in San Francisco is a good example of the BDSM public scene. Group discussion and support can be found on the internet at soc.subculture.bondage/BDSM. Well, have fun and stay safe.
Again, I'm Ashling O'Grady.
And I'm Juliet Muse, and thank you for listening.
No teasing.
Important to be able to trust your sexual playmate, so please know your boundaries, have respect, and be aware of the proper safety measures to be taken into practice when getting heated in the bedroom.
Hey, hey, you're listening to KBOO 90.7. I'm Jammin' Joey, and this is Loving Your You. Our industrious team of hardworking cats has spent the last 2 days out on the streets of Portland interviewing folks about healthy relationships. We're going to play some clips from those interviews to get some positive thought and discussion rolling. Before we dive right into that, you might be wondering what healthy relationships have to do with loving you. I think it's important when discussing healthy, positive relationship dynamics to realize this. You cannot expect to love someone in a positive, uplifting manner or have them reciprocate that love unless you first have a grasp and understanding of self-love. Now, let's get these interviews. We were going around asking people what makes a positive, healthy relationship and how commitment and trust and those sort of things play into that. And again, you're listening to KBOO 90.7. I'm Jammin' Joey, and this is Loving Your You.
It's a combination of trust that is usually something that you're privy to have, you know, the openness to allow someone their freedom, but at the same time you have a certain request of that person that they're willing to honor. It's a delicate balance, I think, between the two.
I've been in a relationship for about 25 years, and I would say that the main thing is being in solidarity with the other person.
Solidarity. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that means to you?
I think solidarity represents the idea that you respect the person for who they are and you are loyal to them. Not for personal reasons, but for the idea of building something larger than yourself.
I think trust is a big, big part of the relationship. And there's so little trust nowadays, very little real contact with people, and therefore trust is not as important, not as included. And not only trust, but communication is a very, very big important aspect. And not understanding how others communicate can be a hindrance. You know, talking and letting your feelings out, but not letting emotions run wild. And that's a big one for women, and I'm still working on that. Knowing what you need to say and get it out, but don't get too angry. Don't start crying, you know, because then I've noticed that the opposite sex tend to shut down. They don't know how to take that. And this is just with personal relationships, with platonic relationships. I think both trust and communication really matter as well. Don't let things slide. If it bothers you, talk about it when it bothers you, because things can snowball quickly, and then you know, and then that's when your emotions start running wild, and people don't understand why you're so angry, because they haven't heard about it until this point when you're really angry.
You touched quite a bit on gender dynamics. How do you feel about how the gender of the partner actually affects that relationship in terms of like communication and trust?
Well, I think there's a huge dynamic between the way the male gender tend to think versus the female. You know, women tend, I just recently learned this, we use both hemispheres of our brain. We're very emotionally powered creatures, you know, and that's part of the reason why we tend to think so intuitively, but overanalyze situations, whereas men, they can easily let go of things.
I think that trust is very important for a committed relationship, and dedication, really showing that you are interested in the relationship and will do things for the other person, selfless or not. Just a lot of dedication and trust, and being able to show compassion for a person, whether it's a dating relationship or just really friends even.
Can you identify like any sort of differences in how that plays out, whether it's a sexual relationship or a platonic relationship?
Well, I mean, trust in a sexual relationship, I think, is very important, because you have to be able to trust your partner to be dedicated to you if monogamy is important. And then in a friendship, trust is still really important, because a best friend, you really rely on them, and being able to trust them to come through or be someone to help you is very important.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Michael.
I think a committed, healthy relationship is one where you find a person that, whether you're an A a Z or two A's or two Z's, is that you can compromise in whatever comes up, whether it be living, whether it be arguing, whether it be loving. You find your happy medium and base the relationship on it.
All right, and we're back. I certainly hope that these interviews were informative and started some positive thoughts and conversations for all you listeners out there. A little shout out to our wonderful team. We have DJs Logan Barrett, Miss Kayla Stone, and the most fabulous Jessica Cachet handling our tech work. And again, you're listening to KBOO 90.7. I'm Jammin' Joey. And remember, folks, love your lovers, love your friends, and love your you.
Sex is a delightful act commonly shared between two people. It is an expression of love between two people who feel the stirrings of love and wish to show it outside the verbal and the material. Trust, like love and sex, is a powerful thing. The underlying problem is the importance of trust varies from person to person. I would like to quote songwriter activist John Ono Lennon. He quotes, "We've got this gift of love, but love is like a precious plant. You can't just accept it and leave it in the cupboard, or think it's going to get on by itself. You've got to keep watering it. you've got to really look after it and nurture it.
Once again, guys, I'm Kayla Stone, here with KBOO 90.7 FM. Our goal is to deliver listeners the truth, not gossip. The hot topic here today has been sexual discussion from word of mouth chosen not to be repressed, addressing the most pressing matters concerning our young adults, not only in the community of Portland, Oregon, but also around the world. Thank you very much. I'm signing off.
That was Kayla Stone, narrator for this whole program, and thanks to everyone involved from outside in to help make this project happen. All of the resources that were listed in the individual pieces will be listed together on the Circle A Radio page at the KBOO website, kboo.fm/CircleA Radio.
You have been listening to Circle A Radio. Circle A Radio airs the first and third Wednesday of every month from 6 to 7 p.m., here on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
You can get in touch with us through our page on the KBOO website or at circlearadio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.